Good morning, everyone. This is our fourth class, which we've entitled Integrity and Trust. Integrity and trust are important facets of ecclesial leadership and cooperation. These should be as well the attributes of all believers who are striving to fulfill God's will and to follow His commandments. Webster's Dictionary defines integrity as soundness of moral character. Soundness of moral character. Integrity scripturally has to do with being morally sound or morally healthy. So you can see it's very much aligned with a dictionary definition. A person with integrity knows what is important to God, and through the study of His Word, he consistently lives in light of what is important to God. And it's imperative that we clearly understand through our reading and studying what the will of Yahweh is and seek diligently to perform it. The psalmist confirms in Psalm 25, and let's go to Psalm 25, and let's pick up at verse 10. Psalm 25 and verse 10. All the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth unto such as keep His covenant and His testimonies. For Thy name's sake, O Lord, pardon mine iniquity, for it is great. What man is he that feareth the Lord? Him shall He teach in the way that he shall choose. His soul shall dwell at ease, and his seed shall inherit the earth. The secret of the Lord is with them that fear Him, and He will show them His covenant. Mine eyes are ever toward the Lord, for He shall pluck my feet out of the net. Turn Thee unto me, and have mercy upon me, for I am desolate and afflicted. The troubles of my heart are enlarged. O bring Thou me out of my distresses. Look upon mine affliction and my pain, and forgive all my sins. Consider mine enemies, for they are many, and they hate me with cruel hatred. O keep my soul and deliver me. Let me not be ashamed, for I put my trust in Thee. Let integrity and uprightness preserve me, for I wait on Thee. Redeem Israel, O God, out of all his troubles. Continuing, let us go to the 26th chapter of Psalms, Psalm 26, and let's start at verse 1. Judge me, O Lord, for I have walked in mine integrity. I have trusted also in the Lord. Therefore I shall not slide. Examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Try my reins and my heart. For Thy loving kindness is before mine eyes, and I have walked in Thy truth. I have not sat with vain persons, neither will I go with dissemblers. I have hated the congregation of evildoers, and will not sit with the wicked. I will wash mine hands in innocency, so will I compass thine altar, O Lord, that I may publish with the voice of thanksgiving, and tell of all thy wondrous works. Lord, I have loved the habitation of thy house, and the place where thine honor dwelleth. Gather not my soul with sinners, nor my life with bloody men, in whose hands is mischief, and their right hand is full of bribes. But as for me, I will walk in mine integrity. Redeem me, and be merciful unto me. My foot standeth in an even place. In the congregations will I bless the Lord. And lastly, let's consider Proverbs 20, verses 5 through 7. Counsel in the heart of man is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. Most men will proclaim everyone his own goodness, but a faithful man who can find? The just man walketh in his integrity. His children are blessed after him. Integrity involves more than living our values. It involves subscribing to God's values, and with His help, learning to conform our conduct to those values. Integrity is like the foundation of a house. If it is unstable, the entire house may come apart when it comes under pressure. Let's turn to Matthew, the 7th chapter. Matthew 7, verses 24 through 27. And we're very familiar with this passage. And behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with the waves. Wrong chapter. Let's go to the 7th chapter in verse 24. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And every one that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. It is a unique spiritual house in which the brethren of Christ dwell. Let's go to the 3rd chapter of Hebrews. Hebrews 3. And let's read the first 6 verses of Hebrews 3. Wherefore, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, consider the apostle and high priest of our profession, Christ Jesus, who was faithful to him that appointed him, as also Moses was faithful in all his house. For this man was counted worthy of more glory than Moses, inasmuch as he who hath builded the house hath more honor than the house. For every house is builded by some man, but he that built all things is God. And Moses verily was faithful in all his house as a servant, for a testimony of those things which were to be spoken after. But Christ as a son over his own house, whose house are we, if we hold fast the confidence and the rejoicing of the hope firm unto the end. A person with integrity of heart is a morally and spiritually healthy individual. We read of David in Psalm 78 and verse 72 concerning Yahweh's selection of him as the shepherd and spiritual leader of Israel. So he, that is David, fed them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands. Let's go also to 1 Kings, the 9th chapter, and look at the first 7 verses there concerning David's words to the Lord's words to Solomon concerning his father David. And it came to pass when Solomon had finished the building of the house of the Lord and the king's house and all Solomon's desire which he was pleased to do, that the Lord appeared to Solomon the second time as he had appeared unto him at Gibeon. And the Lord said unto him, I have heard thy prayer and thy supplication, and that thou hast made before me. I have hallowed this house which thou hast built to put my name there forever, and mine eyes and mine heart shall be there perpetually. And if thou wilt walk before me as David thy father walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded thee, and will keep thee my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of thy kingdom upon Israel forever, as I promised to David thy father, saying, There shall not fail thee a man upon the throne of Israel. But if ye shall at all turn from following me, ye or your children, and will not keep my commandments and my statutes which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, Then will I cut off Israel out of the land which I have given them, and this house which I have hallowed for my name will I cast out of my sight, and Israel shall be a proverb and a byword among all people. And at this house which is high, every one that passeth by it shall be astonished, and shall hiss, and they shall say, Why hath the Lord done thus unto this land and to this house? And they shall answer, Because they forsook the Lord their God, who brought forth their fathers out of the land of Egypt, and have taken hold upon other gods, and have worshipped them and served them. Therefore hath the Lord brought upon them all this evil. Integrity isn't determined by circumstances. It's based on credentials. And it shouldn't be confused with reputation. That is, God's selection of David was based upon, you know, his credentials, who he actually was, not just a reputation. A person's reputation is only the shadow of his character. A good reputation may or may not be an accurate reflection of a person's actual character. If we focus diligently on developing our spiritual character, integrity will be the result of such faith and effort. Integrity has to do with a sense of consistency between a person's inner values and attitudes and his outward words and actions. The more consistent we are, the higher the degree of integrity we possess. Integrity stems from the Latin word integer, which means whole and complete, such as a whole number, which is also called an integer. When you have integrity, others will be able to visibly see it through your actions, your words, your decisions, and the methods that you use. The possession of a moral compass will be readily apparent. Turn with me, please, to Psalm 7 and verse 8. The Lord shall judge the people. Judge me, O Lord, according to my righteousness and according to mine integrity that is in me. And in Psalm 26, and let's pick up at verse 1. Judge me, O Lord, for I have walked in mine integrity. I have trusted also in the Lord. Therefore I shall not slide. Examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Try my reins and my heart. For thy loving kindness is before mine eyes, and I have walked in thy truth. We read this earlier concerning the significance of integrity and maintaining that integrity. The man Daniel is another excellent example of integrity, as we see often its significance in the prophet's life. Let's go to Daniel, the first chapter. Daniel 1, and let's start at verse 3. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning of the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed men a daily provision of the king's meat, and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, and at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. He had made up his mind, in essence, that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat. And as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these 4 children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. As a result of his integrity, Daniel wouldn't compromise his conviction and his dedication to Yahweh, even as a young man. His values, his words, his actions, even then, were thoroughly consistent with his conviction. Let's go to the 2nd chapter of Daniel and pick up at verse 26. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, Art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen, and the interpretation thereof? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, The secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers, show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets, and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter, and he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. In this we see not only Daniel's unique humility, but also the maintenance of his strong integrity. And while there are many other illustrations, let's consider one more from the life of Daniel. Let's go to the 6th chapter and pick up at verse 7. Daniel 6 and verse 7. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber, toward Jerusalem he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed, and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, The thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said before the king, That Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men assembled unto the king, and said unto the king, Know, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king establisheth may be changed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. Daniel was willing to suffer death rather than sacrifice his godly values and practices. His worship of Yahweh and his commitment to the true God never wavered. The absence or lack of integrity manifests itself in different ways. Inconsistency, for example, in a person's words and actions, saying one thing and doing another, is a lack of honesty. It is an inconsistency of speech, oftentimes, that betrays one as not having true honesty. Let's go to Acts, the 5th chapter. Acts 5. Beginning at verse 1. Acts 5 and verse 1. But a certain man named Ananias, with Sapphira his wife, sold a possession and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie to the Holy Spirit, and to keep back part of the price of the land? Whilst it remained, was it not thine own? And after it was sold, was it not in thine own power? Why hast thou conceived this thing in thine heart, that thou hast lied not unto men, but unto God? And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the spirit. And great fear came on all them that heard these things. And the young men arose, wound him up, and carried him out, and buried him. And it was about the space of 3 hours after, when his wife, not knowing what was done, came in. And Peter answered unto her, Tell me whether ye sold the land for so much. And she said, Yea, for so much. Then Peter said unto her, How is it that ye have agreed together to tempt the Spirit of the Lord? Behold, the feet of them which have buried thy husband are at the door, and shall carry thee out. Then fell she down straightway at his feet, and yielded up the spirit. And the young men came in and found her dead, and carrying her forth, buried her by her husband. Honesty is without question an absolutely necessary quality of spiritual leadership, but also we know for all covenanted. It takes courage as well to act according to one's values. And these values for us are God's values. Peter, for a while, failed to manifest such courage. We're familiar with Peter's actions as recorded in Mark, the 14th chapter. If you'll turn there with me, please. Mark 14. And let's read verses 27 through 21. Excuse me, 27 through 31. And Jesus saith unto them, All ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. But after that I am risen, I will go before you into Galilee. But Peter said unto them, Although all shall be offended, yet will not I. And Jesus saith unto him, Verily I say unto thee, that this day, even in this night, before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. But he spake the more vehemently, If I should die with thee, I will not deny thee in any wise. Likewise all said they all. We too must always be on our guard, maintaining the courage of our convictions. We know what happened, but we also know that Peter went on to become a strong spiritual leader, often manifesting the strength of character and the courage needed to defend the truth. Peter had to ultimately confront self through a deep personal honesty. A person of integrity doesn't make excuses or blame others for his shortcomings. All spiritual leaders have a clear sense of godly values that gives guidance regarding how to relate to the Father, ourselves, and to others. We must relate to each other in humility and love. We need to listen actively, which we address when talking about the importance of communication. We must speak the truth in love. We must build consensus. We must handle disagreement. We must forgive, receive correction, confess sin, and appreciate the value of collective wisdom. For without counsel, purposes are disappointed, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Proverbs 15:22. Let's consider the further admonition of Solomon in Proverbs 10:9. He who walks in integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will be found out. And also in Proverbs 11:3, the integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors, shall destroy them. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. There were some things that Yahweh's servant Job would learn through trial, but his integrity was unquestionable. We're familiar with the question asked by Job's wife in Job 2:9. Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. What advice? But he said unto her, Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? And all this did not Job sin with his lips? Job further illustrates his integrity in Job 13:15. Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him, but I will maintain mine own ways before him. Let's go to Job 27. And let's begin at verse 1. Moreover, Job continued his parable and said, As God liveth, who hath taken away my judgment, and the Almighty, who hath vexed my soul, all the while my breath is in me, and the Spirit of God is in my nostrils. My lips shall not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. God forbid that I should justify you. Till I die, I will not remove mine integrity from me. My righteousness I hold fast, and will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach me so long as I live. Job's attitude is reflected in Job 31:6. Let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know my integrity. We too should always be maintaining our integrity, evident in Yahweh's service. Honesty and trust are central to integrity. and acting with honor and truthfulness is characteristic of a person with integrity. People who demonstrate integrity draw others to them because they're trustworthy, they're credible, and they're dependable. Trust is gained as you're seen to act in the best interest of the ecclesia rather than advancing your personal agenda. Those who have integrity are principled and can be counted on to behave in honorable ways even when no one is watching. The truth is that God is watching, for he knoweth the secrets of the heart, as we read in Psalm 44 and verse 21. And we find in Proverbs 15, verse 3, the eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. Many people view integrity as an outdated idea that is either expendable or no longer applicable in an age of moral relativism. Just as honesty is essential for trust, and trust is essential for spiritual leadership, so integrity is essential for an individual to become trustworthy. What are other aspects of a strong integrity? Well, let's consider a variety of them. When we're acting in accordance with our beliefs, when we are fulfilling the will of God, this indicates a strong integrity. There must be clarity in our integrity. The individual who acts with integrity is clear as to their values, their beliefs, and their priorities. Like a fine gemstone, light shined in this person is not scattered or diffused by impurities and inconsistencies. Clarity of purpose and principles are evident in each action, decision, and communication. Another aspect of a strong integrity is constancy, faithfulness, fidelity, stability, being steadfast and unwavering. These words define the person who possesses constancy. They are faithful to the commitments and the promises that they make with no exceptions. Consistency is closely tied to constancy, and consistency transforms beliefs into action. The constancy of our beliefs is demonstrated through the consistency of our actions. Consistency promotes trust and provides a sense of stability to others. We know that congruency is also an important part of a strong integrity. Congruency in geometry means that two objects are roughly the same shape and size. Applied to us, it means that there is alignment between what we feel on the inside and what we do on the outside. Commitment is also a very important facet of a strong integrity. The person of integrity commits to act in a particular manner, and for us, that is being committed to God's word and his will. We mentioned courage earlier, and it is a paramount constituent of integrity. The willingness to face or to deal with anything that is difficult or painful, rather than avoiding it by making another choice. The person of integrity faces and makes that difficult choice, even when the outcome could be extremely unpopular. And lastly, concern is an important aspect of integrity. When used as a verb, it means to show interest or regard for a person or thing. Its opposite is indifference. The concern we speak of here is the ethical part of the definition of integrity. The person with integrity is concerned with understanding and doing what is right. Concern also requires a consideration of others' interests rather than a sole devotion to our own. Let's consider another example of spiritual and personal integrity. The man Joseph. He was tested as to financial integrity, and as we know, he was put in charge of Potiphar's house and later put in charge of Pharaoh's business. He was also tested as to his moral purity, encouraged by Potiphar's wife to commit adultery, and Joseph's moral integrity triumphed when he refused and went to prison for it. He went to prison because he did what was right. Let's go to Genesis 39. Genesis 39, and let's read verses 7 through 9. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, Lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? When Joseph's brothers came back to him after he had ascended the throne in Egypt, we see the depth of Joseph's integrity. He brought his brothers to him, and he fell on their necks and wept, forgiving them. Joseph said, For this cause God sent me here. Do not be hard on yourselves. We know that Joseph could have readily and easily brought revenge upon them, but he sought no revenge. Let's go to Genesis 45, picking up at verse 1. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him. And he cried, Cause every man to go out from me. And there stood no man with him while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said unto his brethren, Come near to me, I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. He had the spiritual integrity to do what was right. And such must be the case with each of us. And if you're called upon by your ecclesia to serve, serve with spiritual integrity, developing and maintaining trust throughout the ecclesia. We must strive to be a Joseph, to be a Daniel, in our practices and in our convictions. Trust, closely associated with integrity, as we've discussed, is likewise a prerequisite for a healthy ecclesia. Trust means that we have confidence in the intentions and motives of another. Integrity, you'll remember, is sound moral character. We cannot have integrity without being trustworthy. We understand that trust is a commitment, and it signifies a special relationship, being honest in all our motives and our practices. We must regard trust as the glue of the ecclesia in maintaining strong spiritual relationships. And that's very important. We must see trust and employ it in such a manner as it is indeed the glue of the ecclesia in maintaining strong spiritual relationships. A lack of trust, or even less trust, prevents or hampers the cooperation and spiritual well-being of the ecclesia, and thereby affects our ability to work together effectively in the ecclesial environment. When a breach in trust occurs, it can be devastating. When a breach in trust occurs, it can be devastating. In most cases, though, the opposite of trust is not distrust. Our experience is much more complex. For example, we might trust an individual in some aspects and not so much with other things. Fortunately, our understanding of trust and its meaning have to do with our relationship to God and, as a result, to one another. We learn who to trust and what not to trust in. Let's go to Psalm 62, starting at verse 1. Truly my soul waiteth upon God. From him cometh my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be greatly moved. How long will ye imagine mischief against a man? Ye shall be slain, all of you. As a bowing wall shall ye be, and as a tottering fence. They only consult to cast him from his excellency. They delight in lies. They bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly. Selah. My soul, wait thou only upon God, for my expectation is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. In God is my salvation and my glory. The rock of my strength and my refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times, ye people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. Selah. Surely men of low degree are vanity, and men of high degree are a lie, to be laid in the balance. They are altogether lighter than vanity. Trust not in oppression, and become not vain in robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart upon them. God hath spoken once, twice have I heard this, that power belongeth unto God. Also unto thee, O Lord, belongeth mercy, for thou renderest it to every man according to his work. And while we're in Psalms, let's go to Psalm 49 and pick up at verse 5. Wherefore should I fear in the days of evil, when the iniquity of my heels shall compass me about? They that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. For the redemption of their soul is precious, and it ceaseth forever. That he should still live forever and not see corruption. For he seeth that wise men die, likewise the fool and the brutish person perish, and leave their wealth to others. Their inward thought is that their houses will continue forever, and their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. Nevertheless, man being in honor and abideth not, he is like the beasts that perish. This their way is their folly, yet their posterity approve their sayings. Selah. So how do we build trust as a spiritual leader and generally as a servant of Yahweh? We know that it takes time to build trust, and we also know that it can be destroyed in a moment. It is necessary for us to keep it precious. So how do we build trust? Trust with generosity. Be patient. Be dependable. Be consistent. And we can't emphasize that consistency enough. Consistent with the word and will of God. Be open in our communication. This is true transparency. Communicate, communicate, communicate. Always do the right thing. We trust those who live, walk, and serve with integrity, like Christ, for example. Be willing to always do the right thing, always. Admit error, correct it. When those challenging times arise in our lives, we, of course, should turn to God first in prayer for direction and support. It is also true that having a friend in the truth, a confidant in the ecclesia or in the brotherhood who we can turn to, who can help bring comfort and encouragement. The bond of trust is strong and the relationship is based upon the truth of God's Word. These are wonderful relationships. These are the types of relationships we should work towards throughout our ecclesias. We have a wonderful example of friendship and trust in that of Jonathan and David, with love for Yahweh at its foundation. Let's consider what the Scriptures have to say about it. But before we do, let's talk about the qualities that make for lasting, trusting relationships in the truth. First of all, we should desire what is best for the other individual. We should have sympathy and empathy. And this isn't an excuse for condoning or tolerating error. But let us demonstrate our understanding and our sympathy and empathy. Honesty is necessary, the ability to speak truthfully, even about some perceived faults. There must be a mutual understanding and compassion. And accountability is a must. Let's go to 1 Samuel, the 18th chapter, and I'd like to read verses 1 through 5. We read in 1 Samuel 18, starting at verse 1. And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David and his garments, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Let's go to 1 Samuel 20, and pick up at verse 35. And it came to pass in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field at the time appointed with David, and a little lad with him. And he said unto his lad, Run, find out now the arrows which I shoot. And as the lad ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. And when the lad was come to the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan cried after the lad and said, Is not the arrow beyond thee? And Jonathan cried after the lad, Make speed, haste, stay not. And Jonathan's lad gathered up the arrows and came to his master. But the lad knew not anything, only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his artillery unto his lad, and said unto him, Go, carry them to the city. And as soon as the lad was gone, David arose out of a place toward the south, and fell on his face to the ground, and bowed himself three times. And they kissed one another, and wept one with another, until David exceeded. And Jonathan said to David, Go in peace, for as much as we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, The Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed forever. And he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. Let's go to 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel, the 23rd, let's go to the first chapter. 2 Samuel, the first chapter, And let's read verses 23 through 27. Second Samuel 1, 23 through 27. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with other delights, who put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How are the mighty fallen, and the weapons of war perished? There is no question that David and Jonathan wanted what was best for each other. They always had a concern for one another's welfare. Their sympathy and empathy for each other was profound. Always honest and upfront with each other, clearly demonstrating a mutual understanding and a deep trust based upon agape as well as filial love. Unquestionable trust and love like that of Christ were the foundation elements in their relationship. And I'd like to close by reading a quote from Brother Roberts from the Seasons of Comfort. Well may we say with David, I will walk in mine integrity. I will not sit with the wicked, in whose hand is mischief and their right hand is full of bribes. The ways of wickedness are always our ways of darkness and death, however pleasant and helpful for the time being. The ways of righteousness are ways of light and life, however inconvenient or even painful they may be while they last. Light is sown for the righteous, and gladness for the upright in heart. Let me start over the quote from Seasons of Comfort by Brother Roberts to close our class. Well may we say with David, I will walk in mine integrity. I will not sit with the wicked, in whose hand is mischief, and their right hand is full of bribes. The ways of wickedness are ways of darkness and death, however pleasant and helpful for the time being. The ways of righteousness are ways of light and life, however inconvenient or even painful they may be while they last. Light is sown for the righteous and gladness for the upright in heart. Therefore, says David, wait on the Lord. Be of good courage. Wait, I say, on the Lord. But we may feel we are not worthy of so great a salvation. In a sense, we are not and cannot be. In a sense, we must be. We must yield to God what He requires of us, faith in what He has promised, and obedience to what He has commanded. This is worthiness. But as for a perfect righteousness that shall entitle us to salvation, this has long been settled as an impossibility. The whole world is become guilty before God. The Scripture hath concluded all under sin, that the promise by faith of Jesus Christ might be given to them that believe. What is wanted is a joyful faith, a loving conformity to the commandments of the Lord, and a humble and contrite frame of mind in all our ways, on the basis of enlightenment in the truth.